Chapter 14. Ilya took her place in the chamber of Kurultai and ran her eyes over the throng, trying to ascertain how many warriors had made it and how many were missing. The Khans of many brotherhoods sat in ranks, all facing a low stone-flagged platform. Flames burned in ceremonial pillars, and the banners of the old Chogorian realms and empires stood behind the platform, all traced in gold and red, hung from wooden poles and lashed in place with leather thongs. The Stormseers sat around the edge of the platform, 2 dozen of them, all that remained of the entire Legion's complement. Yashugai was with them in the place of honour, as was Arvida. Ilya sat beside them both, given her position by the ever-respectful Ordu. The commanders of the Legion sat on the other side of the semicircle. Ganzorig and Kin Fai, the 2 Noyan Khans of the Hordes, Shiban Taxia, Hai Shan, Namahi of the Keshig, Jubal Arnazen. Other famed warriors, tempered during the long-running battles of the war, sat close by. Ayanbata of the Brotherhood of the Night Star, Kulan of the Brotherhood of the Golden Path. Facing them all, seated on the old plains chair, was the Khagan, the Khan of Khans, wearing the long kaftan and leather jerkin of the Altak. His unarmored hands rested on his knees, his severe face gazing down from the high vantage, half hidden in the flickering firelight. His oil-black hair was unbound and hung across his shoulders. For some in the chamber, this was the first time they had laid eyes on their liege lord for years. Ilya did not look at Shiban, sitting across the semicircle of the hall from her, nor at Arvida close by. The atmosphere in the chamber was tense, fueled by rumours and counter-rumours. The last of the Khans took their places. A gong sounded, the lumens faded, and the flames reared up in their burnished bowls to compensate.
"My sons," said Jagatai in Korchin, sweeping his gaze across the assembled throng. "You have fought through fire and pain to reach this place. The road has been long. Many who ought to stand with us now are gone."
Ilya felt her pulse pick up. After 5 years with the White Scars, she could follow their language with some ease, and thought it was never more beautiful than when spoken by the Primarch. His voice in that place still had its old wind-burned resonance, low, measured, stained with quiet power. The Khans, the Zardian Aga, the Lords of the Legion, they all listened intently. Even now, there were no guarantees, and none knew yet how he would rule.
"If time remained, I would give honor to them all," Jagatai said. "But every hour we remain here is perilous. We must move again. But now, the only question remains, to where? You all know the pattern of this war. The enemy bends the warp to his will with storms we cannot pierce. Our routes to terror are watched or blocked, all by forces that outnumber us many times over. We have tried to break free and have been cast back every time. Survival has been secured by remaining asunder, by running apart, by deception. That cannot suffice any longer, for the noose has tightened. Only 2 choices remain: to attempt the throne world again, or to make our stand here, far from home, and hope to wound my brother so deeply that the sacrifice will not be wasteful. For, doubt this not, if we engage the War Master's forces here, there can be only 1 outcome. Many traitor legions ply their way towards terror, supported and aided by their countless mortal armies. We are strong enough to draw his attention, but not to end him."
That brought a low ripple of murmurs. Many of the Khans would have disputed that, given the chance, yet none openly gainsaid their lord. Ilya felt her grip on her seat edge tighten.
And if we honor our oaths, Jagatai went on, are all ways barred to us now? Maybe so. Maybe not. We have been pursuing one hope, little more than a rumor. In another age, we would not have stooped to such, but the times are straitened.
His dark gaze moved to Arvida.
Sorcerer, you will tell.
Arvida stood, turning to address the rows of Khans. Ilya thought he moved awkwardly, as if carrying an old wound. He had been hurt at Kalium.
We have a name, said Arvida, also in Korchin. It is Novator Pieter Achelieu, known to us through the service of General Lavalion. Of all of those of the novice nobility, it is believed he holds the greatest chance of divining a route for us.
The general vouched for him, and amid the last sequence of raids, he was sought on the world Herivale. We did not find him there, but now we have a location. The Catullus Rift. To the best of our knowledge, there is nothing there worthy of attention from the enemy.
It is an isolated place of no strategic import and with no recorded activity. If we wish to seek this man out, that is where we must go.
Arvida looked back up to the high dais.
If we wish to seek him out, he said again.
The sorcerer resumed his place.
So, this is the sage's council, the one we have been fighting for, said Jagatai. It is in our power to reach Catullus. If this man exists, we may find him. And if he has the power over the ether, we hope, that will give us our way home.
And if he does not,
Shiban asked. Ilya's heart sank. The skepticism in his voice was plain.
Then, Shiban Taxia, said Jagatai, it may be as good a place as any to meet the enemy.
Shiban smiled, a strained expression on his scarred face.
Forgive me, Kagan, but this is Kurultai, where all words may be spoken. Many have already fallen chasing this dream. Every battle we fight takes us further from where we need to be. There are other choices. There are, said Jagatai.
Our home,
said Shiban, turning to face his brothers and eliciting another subdued wave of agreement from the chamber.
If we cannot break open the path to Terra, we may yet return to Chogoris. We know nothing of its fate. Perhaps its people fight on, or perhaps it is laid waste.
He looked up directly at the Primarch.
If it is honor we are to satisfy, then we should first tend to the hearths of those who raised us.
We cannot go back to Chogoris,
said Yashugai. There was no triumph in his voice, only sadness.
It would be beyond our strength to try.
And yet, Terra is not.
If Terra falls, nothing else remains.
Yashugai did not look at Shiban, but addressed the Primarch, as all at Kurultai did.
The war would be over. Horus would be free to scour the rest of the galaxy, world by world.
There are rumors,
said Ganzorig, Hasik's successor.
They say Ultramar still stands, that the Raven is still alive in spite of everything. The Warmaster cannot be everywhere.
Not yet, said Yashugai, but hand him the throne and that will change.
This man, Achelia, is but a mortal,
said Kinfai, Ganzorig's counterpart in the Legion Command.
He may live yet. He may be dead. He may aid us. It may be beyond his power. These are weak strands to clutch at.
They are, said Ilya, pushing herself to her feet. She did not like addressing the Ordu in their own place, and she spoke in Gothic, not trusting her Korchin to convey her thoughts aright. Weak strands indeed. It would shame me to bring them to you. If there were any other chances we had not tried, I would agree with your words, and with Tuxia's, and with any other council that said, enough, we have run and we have hunted, but there is no path left. The Khans listened in silence. Ilya could feel their masked eyes on her, quiet, respectful, skeptical. They had always listened to her, right from the very start. That burden had been a heavy one, and the weight of it had never lessened. But you did not know this man, she went on. A novator of the Houses Magisterial is a great lord, and Ashelia was amongst the greatest of them. He had the ear of the palace itself, and I saw his warpcraft enacted during the Crusade, when he brought fleets to war through storms of such magnitude they said the task was impossible. Be in no doubt. He is a magister of the ether, a true guide.
And yet, if he could find the path to Terra,
said Shiban, also in Gothic,
would he not have taken it?
I believe he remained in the void.
Because he could not do otherwise.
Because his duties kept him there.
You cannot know that.
Ilya felt her anger rising. Shiban's tone had become sardonic. No, Tuxia, I cannot. There is much that is guesswork. I have never hidden that.
Yet, whatever the truth,
interjected Arvida, reverting to his fluent Korchin,
we know where he is now. I have seen it.
And we can gain this location,
added Yashugai.
The ways are charted, and the journey is short. Perhaps that is fate, or maybe good fortune. The first we have for a while.
Then you support this, Zadyin Aga? Asked Ganzerig. Is that true?
Because when has Zu-Ilya ever led us wrong, Noyan Khan?
Said Yashugai, smiling.
And because we swore to gain Terra after Prospero, and to break an oath is a sacred crime, punishable by the gods themselves. And because it is the way of danger and discovery, and as for myself, I am not yet done living, and wish to frustrate the enemy a little longer.
That brought answering smiles from the assembled Khans.
But it is not my order to make,
said Yashugai, bowing to the Primarch. All eyes turned back to Jagatai. He had remained silent throughout the exchange, listening intently, his deep-set eyes giving nothing away. Ilya held her breath.
You answered the call, Jagatai said, addressing them all again.
You were faithful, even when treachery knocked on our doors from within. I know the cost already borne, and until this moment, in truth, I was not fully of one mind, for I yearn for nothing more than to finish what was started on Prospero. I am hunted by my brothers, and my blood runs hot from the shame of it, and my wish is only to turn and face them. Yet this is the easier choice, to become as they are, and to counter rage with rage, and fight blind, knowing that the greater cause will be lost.
Ilya sank back against her seat. Once again, the trust was there, though it felt to her, and had always felt, that she had done so little to earn it.
Distrust the path of ease,
Jagatai said.
That is what we have been taught, is it not? So, I give the command. If we are to die, then Catullus will serve. Return to your ships. Make ready for the warp. Our hunters are tight on our scent. So, I wish us gone swiftly. You have 5 hours.
The Khagan looked at Ilya and inclined his head in what might have been acknowledgement.
We will do
what the sage counsels, he said. One last throw of the dice.
2 hours before the Swordstorm's engines were primed to fire, the first signal came in. An outrider on the edge of the system picked up the dim foreblip of an incoming ship and initiated a deep scour sensor sweep. Significant ships were yet to join the muster, among them the Milak Carter, so all checks were thorough. The gun corvette, Zha Zha, received the signal and burned hard to close the distance, aiming to get a clearer auger reading. Its crew managed to clarify the signal, but did not recognize the ident. They ran the scan again, cross-checked it, then upgraded the alert to a fleet-wide priority signal. 14th Legion, came the comburst, sent to every ship in the outer perimeter. Repeat, 14th Legion signal incoming. At that stage, the Kaljan had taken position closest to the likeliest incursion points. Returning in poorly hidden anger from Kurultai, Shibban had ordered the attack frigate away from the main cluster of battleships, pulling high above the lumbering void monsters still undergoing preparations for warp jump in Aurelian's shadow.
Can you be sure?
Shibban asked, moments after returning to the bridge to assume full command. The scarred flesh of his exposed face shone from exertion in the practice cages.
No doubt, answered Tamaz, the sensorium master.
Jochi was there too, as was Yiman, promoted to Dagger since Memnos, and many others of the Brotherhood. All were armored, their weapons powered.
Launch intercept, ordered Shibban, taking his seat in the throne. Full speed.
Already primed, the frigate powered up to attack velocity, shooting clear of the other vessels in the local void volume. By then, the alert was still filtering through to the body of the main fleet, putting the Kaljan ahead of the pack. Jochi moved up to Shibban's shoulder.
My Khan, he said warily.
Shibban looked straight ahead.
Do not counsel caution, brother, he said. The others will be with us in moments.
He felt the drum of the engines vibrating up through the decking.
We can at least claim the first kill. These things have not yet been taken away.
The Kaljan overhauled the Zha Zha and assumed point, ahead of the other ships spreading out to intercept the rogue signal. Within moments, the first inbound vessel was detectable on the forward augers.
Arm main lance, ordered Shibban.
How many craft have emerged?
Tamaz did not reply straight away.
One, my Khan.
Shibban laughed.
A brave one. He has broken formation.
Tamaz looked up at him.
No, my lord, just one. No other signals, and we are being hailed.
The rogue ship's details began to spill down the sensor lenses, and immediately the oddness became clear. A system runner, not a warship, barely capable of making warp jumps at all.
Shall I relay the hail? Asked Tamaz.
The Kaljan's lance remained trained on the incoming ship, now almost close enough to spy on the real viewers. Almost without realizing, Shibban ran through the pre-fire routine himself, visualizing the flash of light as the forward lance fired. A ship like that would have no chance. A clean hit would implode it instantly.
My Khan?
Shibban snapped back.
Maintain course, he said. Train macro cannons, engine shots, relay the hail to me.
The audio, when it filtered through his helm systems, was thick with white noise. Even so, the signal was just clear enough, and from the first word Shibban felt a sudden, cold wash of familiarity.
Torgun Khan, five others, Sagyamazan Kill Squad, responding to Legion Master as ordered, awaiting command.
The voice hadn't changed much. Perhaps the Korchin was a little better than it had been, a more Chogorian inflection. At least he had adopted the custom of the Legion now, and there was no more talk of companies. The old Brotherhood of the Moon had been disbanded, its warriors assessed for loyalty before being dispersed under the guidance of other Khans. So by rights, he should not even have used the honorific. By rights, he should have died. That had been the justice of it. The two ships continued to hurtle towards one another, and the system runner became a visible white dot in the far distance. Other vessels of the fleet came into range behind the Kaljan, their weapons primed. At such a distance, they might not have picked up the hail yet, A single shot would still end the situation.
Khan, what are your orders? Asked Jochi.
One shot from the Kaljan or from any other ship, that would do it. There could be no blame attached and little enough loss.
Khan!
Shiban broke from the vision and rose from the throne.
Transmit stand-down notice to all following ships, he said,
striding over to where his Guan Dao had been hung.
Select 10 from the Minghan. Full armor, battle ready.
He activated his blade's energy field, and it sparked into life as eagerly as it had once done on the bone-white plains of Chondax.
Order the ship to come to full stop. Shields down, he commanded,
his eyes locked on the steadily growing blob of light ahead.
Say nothing. Give them nothing. We are going over.
Torgun watched the incoming ships. Merely laying eyes on them again was enough to make his pulse quicken. The ivory prows of the fleet had never been a source of pride, not even at the start, and now they also brought with them the heady nausea of shame. Even after all had been made plain that the Legion was reforming for one final engagement and that all blades were needed in the defence of the Ordu, the decision to respond to the summons had been hard to make. Sanyasa had been in favour, as had Ozad, Arm, Gurg, and Inchig. Holian had been the only other one to hold back. The two of them had resisted, and Khan's word had the greatest weight. But there were no certainties, not among those whose only purpose was to die in battle, and who had been flung far from the heart of the Legion's ranks and honour codes. The possibility of deception had been raised. Perhaps Holian had argued the order was a ruse, elaborately disguised and used by the enemy to flush them out into the open. To die in open combat was honourable, but to be lured into a slaughter was pointless. In truth, though, Torgun had never believed that. The codes were in order, the seals and counter-sigils perfectly aligned. The things that had prevented him from responding immediately were human things, mortal emotions that might have been purged a lifetime ago in another soul. Pride, resentment, the burning guilt of failure, of a step wrongly taken. So now he stood on the rusting bridge of his stolen ship, watching those whom he had once betrayed swarm out to meet him again. He rested his gauntlet on the hilt of his sword, still sheathed and unpowered. A lone frigate had pulled ahead of the rest and was now demanding the lowering of shields and the opening of docking bay doors.
Do it, ordered Torgun quietly. Do anything they ask.
He turned to Sanyasa and the others.
So, here we are. We will meet them together.
Sanyasa remained confident. The prospect of fighting once more among the ranks of Chogoris had reinvigorated him, fueling an already vital warrior energy. They went down to the main docking bay, a cluttered space barely big enough for three landers and the still-functioning jet bikes. The six warriors emerged into the centre of the apron, in armour but helmless and with no weapons in hand. It took a long time for the shuttle to clear the gulf between the vessels. Eventually it arrived, setting down before them on a wash of filthy smoke from charred downthrusters. The craft looked beaten up, almost as much as their own equipment. Crew bay doors hissed open, and the embarkation ramp thudded to the adamantium deck. 11 warriors of the 5th Legion emerged, 10 in standard ivory power armour, all bearing glaives or power swords. The 11th, their Khan, was clad in a suit of gunmetal grey of a strange design, the only concession to the Horde being his pauldrons, which still bore the lightning strike image, gold and red on a white ground. As the boarding party approached, Torgun and the others bowed. No one said a word until the steel-armoured Khan stood before them.
Declare yourself,
came the command, filtered through growling layers of vox enhancement and barely recognisable as human.
Torgun Khan, once of the Brotherhood of the Moon, Torgun replied. 5 others of many brotherhoods, now joined to the Sagyar Mazan. We answer the call.
This information had already been conveyed once, though the questioner seemed to want to hear it again. The steel-armoured Khan said nothing for a while. The energy fields on his warrior's weapons snarled in the silence, casting an electric blue sheen across the landing site. Then the Khan moved closer. Torgon could hear his breath scraping through a damaged vox grill.
"This cannot be chance," the Khan hissed. "This is just one more poor jest. There were never chances, not with you."
Slow realization dawned. Torgon saw the way the armor had been designed to keep its occupant fighting. Its owner must once have been horribly wounded.
"My brother," he began.
"If it had been me, I would not have come back. I would have heard the order and ignored it. I would have remembered Prospero and taken my blade and fallen across it. And even in that, I would have had no honor. There would have been no succor, no respite."
Torgon's face flushed hot. He felt his gauntlets twitch and knew instinctively how quickly he could reach for his blade. He sensed the rest of the hunt pack around him, uncertain now, making their own calculations.
"The order," Torgon said, working hard to keep anger out of his voice, "came from the Khagan."
By now, the steel mask was inches from his face. He could see scratches on the metal, the thousand marks of long combat, and could smell the lubricating oils and the faint burn of servos.
"Turn around," the Khan said. "Take your ship. Go back to the oblivion that was reserved for you."
All heard it. Out of the corner of his eye, Torgon saw the tight fury build on Sunyasa's face. The atmosphere in the hangar became febrile, as if thunder were about to break.
"The order," Torgon repeated, softly, firmly, "came from the Khagan."
He had not quite finished when the first blow hit. A curled fist rammed hard into his exposed face, sending him reeling. Torgon staggered away, tasting blood across his mouth. Another strike thumped into his temple, knocking him to his knees. He would have fallen, but a steel fist caught him by the throat, lifted him up, and slammed him into the nearest wall. He hung, feet barely touching the ground, struggling to breathe.
"We have been so weak for so long," came the voice from behind the mask, seething with a deep, cold loathing. "So many were lost. If all had stood firm, then we would be winning this, not watching our strength bleed from us."
Torgon clamped his hands onto the Khan's forearm, scrabbling at the grip. His vision began to blur. He tried to speak, but could not force the words out.
"Do you understand what you did?"
Amid the fury was pain. Amid the pain, incomprehension.
"Do you truly see it now? Are you blind or merely a fool?"
Torgon heard the fizz of energy weapons igniting and finally went for the hilt of his power sword. He was losing consciousness and needed to strike. His fingers wrapped around the grip and his thumb slipped over the ignition stud. Then he was falling, thudding into the deck in a heap, his temples hammering. He pushed himself back up, teeth gritted, ready to strike. But the Khan had let him go. He had deactivated his own blade and was unclamping his helm seal. Sunyasa and the others were being held back by the rest of the Khan's entourage, unable to intervene. Torgon watched the steel helm lift clear, his vision returning, his fist still tight around the grip of his sword. He could have struck then, thrusting upwards. Shiban Khan's face emerged. At least, it was partly Shiban's face. Half of it had gone, replaced by synth flesh and metal plating. One eye had been replaced with an iron augmetic, and a forest of pistons and nerve bundles protruded from the lip of his gorget. The Talskar scar was still visible, preserved amid the overlapping steel scales, zigzagging across what remained of his cheek. The last time Torgon had looked into those eyes had been on the Swordstorm, years ago. Everything had changed since. The augmetics dragged Shiban's features out of symmetry, fixing a permanent snarl onto what had been an open, pleasant visage. Shiban lowered himself cumbersomely, his armor clanking as it compensated.
Did you think I would kill you? Shiban asked coldly. I have my orders.
Torgon finally let his power sword go.
And you never doubted them? Never.
Torgon spat a gobbet of blood onto the deck.
Do not think I will beg, my brother. I came because I was called, not because I desired it. I care nothing for what you desire, said Shiban.
His voice was the greatest change. It was harsher now, and not just because of the implants in his throat.
You will not be slain by my hand, nor by any hand in the Legion. But neither will you return to the place of honor. I will see to that, if nothing else. Whatever duty is most shameful, that is where you shall serve. When the noose closes and we are fighting again, your blade shall be absent. If there is victory, you will have no part in it. Your station shall be in the rear, the reserves, among the mortals and the mindless.
Torgon stared up at him, his jaw set. Though he had suffered wounds too during the long exile, his face was intact, his armor functional. Of the two of them, it was he now who looked more the White Scars legionary.
Then you would waste our time coming here. You will serve, but you will not atone. There is no atonement. You were sent away to die and failed even in that.
Shiban got back to his feet, leaving Torgon half kneeling. He turned on his heels and stalked back towards the waiting shuttle.
So, is that it? Torgon shouted after him. Is that why you came? To stage this show?
Shiban kept walking. His troops fell in behind him.
You would have laughed at that once, Torgon called out. You would have laughed even to think it.
Shiban kept walking. The shuttle's thrusters keyed up again, flooding the apron with a tide of boiling smoke.
You are not my judge, Shiban Khan. You have been judging me since the day I met you, but you are not the arbiter of this legion.
Shiban kept walking. As he went, he replaced his helm, covering over the puckered mass of scar tissue at his neck.
What happened to you?
Torgon cried out, getting back to his feet. Only then did Shiban halt, as if he would turn. He paused for a moment.
The same thing that has happened to all of us, he said quietly, never looking back.
Then he carried on, up into the crew bay, and the ramp hauled back up. The shuttle's thrusters boomed into life, and the vessel lifted once more, turning tightly before blasting down the exit towards the void doors. The Proudheart led the spearhead into the Aurelian system, closely followed by the rest of the fleet. The formation remained tight, arranged to give the forward lancers unimpeded access. Only at the very margins did the escort-class vessels move away into wide positions, throwing long-range scans out into the void. Signals flooded back immediately. Hundreds of them overlapped and mingled as the auger beams calibrated on the mass of sensoria to be processed. Watching it all, Eidolon felt the first stirrings of combat stimulation begin to build in his ravaged body. He limped back across the throne dais, prowling the limits like a beast yet to be loosed.
Tell me,
he growled.
Give me everything.
The mistress of the watch could not turn from her station, since she had been stitched into it for the past 3 months, her eyes hidden by the burnished cables that fed directly from the flagship's sensor array into her narcotic-soaked mind.
Multiple capital ship signals, she reported, in a stilted monotone. They are moving, Lord, pulling clear to 190-30. We are placed between them and the Mandeville vector.
Eidolon grinned. His battle group accelerated further. He watched data stream in from all sectors of the formation. Gunnels unshuttering, macro cannons shunting out, lancers hitting maximum energy, void shields snapping into full coverage. Konanos would be leading the starboard flank, making the same calculations. Kario would be racing ahead, desperate to bring his retinue into contact first.
The cohorts of Cacophonai, fresh from the defense of Kalium, would be imbibing the last of their combat stims. Whole companies of tactical marines would be drilling the last of their armor into place, pressing the plate down over enhanced flesh and whispering rites of exuberance.
"Bring me visual,"
Eidolon demanded, ignoring the speck of drool that had gathered at his mouth's edge.
"Let me see them."
The first images were grainy, shaking as the ocular feed struggled with the extreme range. For all that, the visuals made his blood spike with pleasure. Pale ships, already underway but far from warp-ready, out of formation, drifting at high anchor over the gas giant as if they had only just arrived.
"Sloppy,"
Eidolon murmured.
"Worse than their reputation."
He stalked back to the throne, over to where his engorged helm waited to be donned.
"Attack speed! All quarters!"
he ordered.
"Engage before they have the chance to come about."
He started to breathe more heavily, wetly, anticipating how the impact would go.
"Let none escape."
The Third Legion flotilla thundered up to full burn, each commander picking a target, each gunnery master marshalling vast arrays of ship-breaking weaponry. Eidolon watched it all unfold from the Proud Heart, placed at the vanguard of the charge, the first to strike, and sure to strike heaviest. Then the first contrary signals were received. Disquiet ran down the sensor pits like a wave, followed by consternation. Warning runes glowed into life, and officials raced from station to station to confirm the readings. The mistress of the watch spoke first.
"My lord, we are too late."
Eidolon turned on her.
"Are you blind?"
he cried.
"I see them! I see them myself!"
He gestured wildly over to the great screens that hung above the command throne, each one linked via thick iron-rimmed cabling to the core reel viewers. The images were stabilizing now, shaking down and losing the thick patina of interference. For a moment, he did not want to believe it. He let the attack run continue, hoping against hope that some mistake had been made and would yet be corrected. In the end, it took the audio feed to shake him out of it.
"Third Legion Battle Group,"
came the grinding, unmistakable accent of Barbarus over the Interfleet comlink, as unlovely and stolid as it had ever been.
"This is the Endurance. You are on an intercept heading, your weapons armed. I am instructed by my lord to inform you that if you do not assume a more suitable trajectory, then you will be disarmed."
Eidolon remained motionless, poised as if to strike. He felt a scream of frustration boiling up within him and clamped it down. Released then, it would have skinned half the crew. The fleet powered onwards. As the images resolved into further details, he saw the prow sigils of the white ships become clear. Death's heads, poorly painted on slovenly shiplines.
"Order, power down,"
he snarled eventually. He turned away, no longer willing to even look at those he had taken for the enemy.
"Fleet wide, do it now!"
He heard the orders dispatched, and each one was like a twist in the wound.
"More hails, my lord," came the enervated voice of the mistress of the watch. "The Death Lord demands your presence and has tidings from the War Master. How shall I respond?"
Eidolon drew in a long, pained breath.
"Tell him I will come."
He started to pace again, allowing the combat stims to ebb, his blood to cool.
"Tell him it will be an honor, a true honor, to parley with the dread liberator of Barbarus."
He looked out again into the void. The gas giant was an object of rare beauty, its hue both intense and varied. Such would be wasted on the savages who orbited it, and with whom he was condemned to work.
"Try to sound sincere," he said. "They tell me his pride is fragile."